From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Alexis, codenamed Doc Holliday Jackson. Most importantly, you are you, you are here, and that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. It's that time of the week again, fellow conspiracy realists. We get to hear from you and we get to share your stories with your fellow listeners. We've got some interesting stuff here. I mean, we always do. We've got some great questions. We've got some strange tales from the land of dream. And then we've got a controversy of the cosmetic sort. I don't know about you guys, Matt, Noel, but I'm coming off of a little bit of a Halloween hangover, and I've already started counting the days down to next Halloween. I've even done a thing on a different show that Noel and I do, Ridiculous History, where I've been segueing to Thanksgiving by saying, hey, the Thanksgiving is horrible for some people. You know, that's a scary situation, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, just having to hang out with your, you know, in-laws and family and all in one setting and not get into some sort of like political flame war. Terrifying prospect.
Yeah. Whatever. It's wonderful. It's wonderful spending time with the family.
So there we go. There we go. That's very sweet. Maybe what we can do for some of our listener mails, it's always been an exercise in gratitude for us here on Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. You are the reason this show exists. We're going to continue as we hurtle headlong toward 2022. With that spirit of thankfulness to everyone who wrote in. And we want to encourage you. We only do about three or four of these every week, but we want to encourage you to write in because, as we always say, we hear every voicemail we get, we read every email you send, and we cannot wait to hear from specifically you. Yes, you specifically, you listening, especially if your name is Anne, because Anne, you wrote to us to say the following. This is a good one. I think we'll all enjoy this. Hey, Ben, Noel, and Matt. I'm a longtime listener since the YouTube days, but first-time writer. I love the show. Thank you for all the hard work you put into the show and creating content 5 days a week. I have a request. I recently learned about the topic of memetic warfare. That's M-E-M-E-T-I-C, like meme. Memetic warfare is a form of psychological and political warfare using memes. Information and disinformation is spread via memes in order to persuade the public to create disunity and or discord. Memetic warfare is the more efficient and sustainable solution to traditional boots-on-the-ground warfare. The theory is that by indirectly infiltrating a nation through disinformation, this dissemination weakens the nation. Consequently, the country is divided and cannot unify behind any belief. Ben, you have touched on this topic of disinformation in regards to anti-vaccine support. It begs us to ask the question, who or what is behind a certain agenda? Is the information authentic? And how can you verify the source? Memetics ties in nicely with your recent episodes on spies. I hope you consider doing a deep dive into memetic warfare. Thank you for your balanced approach to the conspiracy realm and happy Halloween. Anne. Happy Halloween to you, Anne. Hope you had a good one. This is something, look, it's no secret that we all of us here, Doc, Mission Control, Noel, Matt, and myself, we all enjoy a good meme. And if we see one that's especially funny, we send it to each other after hours and stuff. Sometimes we've even stopped the show to be like, hey, look at this. What was it recently? No, oh, is the Cthulhu turkey.
Oh, yes.
I was like, stop. Yeah. We have to look at this.
Of the two you showed, the second one actually had a nice kind of crispy brown skin to it, and it was just the squid parts coming out, which they look pretty cooked. I like a good squid as much as the next guy, even though they are some of the most sentient, intelligent sea creatures And apparently, very, if you've seen My Octopus Teacher, not the best thing to eat probably. But the other one, Ben, was absolute nightmare fuel. It had crab legs spilling out, like very raw looking squishy octopus tentacles. And the turkey itself seemed very dry.
Googly eyes didn't help. But yeah, we know that memes are important. And nowadays, most people in the age of the internet define a meme as, you know, typically like a one panel thing that can recur or it can be altered because it's part of a living conversation. But really, a meme is just an element of culture or system of behavior that can be passed from one individual to another by non-genetic means. So that would be like a meme is almost any unit of an idea. If we all just started saying, I want to be positive, not negative here. If we all just, for instance, started saying, this is an old one on the show, Vibes is a great movie starring Jeff Goldblum, then we would be communicating this meme. Memes are inherently contagious. They exist to be shared. And in the age of information warfare, they have been weaponized. For Anne, I'd like to recommend an excellent article on the New York Times that answers some of your questions. Russian disinformation targets vaccines in the Biden administration. This is by Julian E. Barnes. This is just one example. The practice here is twofold. The first goal is for the Russian government to promote its own vaccines. And to do so, they also are pursuing the second goal, which is to discredit vaccine programs from the U.S. and from Western Europe. And one of the reasons this stuff is so successful is because it hinges on a very simple idea. You can make people laugh and you can be anonymous through the use of memes. I mean, sure, people can slap a watermark on there. And, you know, we all have friends, I'm sure, who feel like their meme was stolen. The meme that they reposted got stolen. Okay. But what we see here is something very valuable to the world of asymmetric warfare. We've talked about asymmetric warfare in the past. The idea in its extreme is basically something like this. Let's say Matt is in charge of a country that doesn't have an aircraft carrier. Matt, would you rather spend untold billions of dollars building an outdated aircraft carrier to try to fight the 11 that the U.S. has? Or choose wisely, my friend. Or would you rather spend, let's say, a couple hundred, $1.5 billion, building missiles that can outmaneuver and destroy an aircraft carrier?
I'm going to go with C, train dolphins to go on suicide missions. No, I'm just joking. You're right. Option A doesn't make any sense, right? Have one aircraft carrier to defend yourself and or go on the offense against 11 or 12. Got it.
Yeah, that's the basic idea. You can leapfrog tactics, even if you can't leapfrog technology. Leapfrogging technology is when, let's say, your primary geopolitical adversary is a country run by Noel. And Noel, you are the U.S. You have 11 aircraft carriers.
Finally.
Right. You did all the research. It's almost impossible to put a price on the blood, sweat, tears, and treasure that your country has put into these. But now the secret's out and all your hard-won research can be used against you by countries run by Matt. Matt, I'm not trying to paint you as a despot.
That's fine. I am. Yeah. But the thing is, okay, as soon as I develop the, you know, missiles, the aircraft killer missiles, Noel then develops the aircraft killer missile defense system. And then it just goes on.
And then you
on
develop
on
the aircraft killer missile defense system, you know,
offense.
And then we just, yeah, well, whatever. I mean, it's endless. It's endless.
And then you guys unite when my spacecraft lands and we start the whole game over again. You know what I mean?
That's right.
It never ends. And so
sounds like a good time to me.
sure it is. Time well spent.
Well, then we can start the meme campaign to that's like disinfo about the whatever your thing is where you invaded. It's not real. And then we just make memes right. about it not being real.
Right. And so, and this is amazing because memes can be used as a form of asymmetrical warfare. They're used through front groups based in Russia. They're used through front groups based in China. And to be absolutely fair, it sounds like we're dunking on other countries, but make no mistake, folks, the U.S. is also actively engaged in memetic warfare. Memes can be insidious in that they can also slowly radicalize people. So you could, for instance, if you wanted to, it is completely possible to get a hold of a user base or people who generally just follow what they think is a meme account. And it might have a theme, right? It might be memes for U.S. veterans or something. And then if you have control of that and you are anonymous, because the assumption by the public, by the customers or the audience rather, is that you yourself are a U.S. veteran, right? But you might not be.
But then it's like, oh, but it's just a cartoon frog. What could be wrong with that? You know, I mean, you look at him. He's so cute and he's smoking a cigarette and making this fun little smirk and just saying all these veiled racist things. Wait a minute. I've been radicalized by a cartoon frog.
Yes. And there's a cycle. Exactly. Just so there's a psychological tendency that occurs. This is hardwired in humans. It is apolitical. It knows no ideology. And it is simply this. People of similar beliefs, when they hang out with one another, they tend to become, over time, more extreme in those beliefs. It does not matter what kind of belief we're talking about. Group polarization is real. And it's weird because you can see examples of it in almost any kind of forum, any kind of town hall, any kind of community. And it does not matter what we're talking about. A lot of people would instantly go to politics, right? Because we live in pretty divisive times here in the West. Part of that divisiveness, I propose, does come from the influence of foreign powers, and they are using memetic warfare. This is taken very seriously. The Rand Group, who is not perfect, but the Rand Group is very intelligent. The Rand Group has done a lot of work on this. You can read some of their research online right now. And they're at the level, they're taking this so seriously that their level of discourse now is not, is this happening? What would it look like? Their level of discourse is, how is this happening? What does the U.S. need to do in response? And one particular paper I read focuses on the U.S. Air Force. Like, that's how serious and concrete the problem becomes. You don't know where those memes are coming from. You really do not. And they are so easy to spoof. You know, this could be a wolf in sheep's clothing kind of idea. And the main thing that we need to remember about this sort of information warfare is that it has to build upon some kernel of pre-existing belief, right? It has to, like, if someone has serious doubts about a political candidate, or not serious doubts, but they have some kind of reservation about a political candidate, or they have some kind of reservation about a medical treatment, that can be subjected to this group polarization, and the likes come in on Facebook and your friends in the group chat are sharing and responding. And, oh my God, I'm getting attention. I'm getting social validation. This therefore must mean I am onto something, and you're onto something, but you're in a grift. That's what's happening. People are changing your opinion without being transparent and without concern for how it may or may not benefit you. We know that due to things like foundations of geopolitics, the idea of by Alexander Dugin, we know that the idea for a lot of powers who found themselves outmatched in conventional warfare was to resort to this weaponized information, to propaganda. And we've seen that it's tremendously influential. It is difficult to quantify. Even the New York Times article I mentioned earlier says it's incredibly difficult to figure out how much stuff is actually being produced, purpose made, by adversarial foreign interest. But we know that this is a perfect time to be a propagandist, especially if you want to promote disunity in an adversarial power.
Well, there was like a segment on a recent John Oliver last week tonight where he was talking about just how easy it is to, I mean, the biggest thing that I think is spreading some of the most dangerous disinformation is things that are masquerading as like infographics that have some little watermark, like it's from, you know, an agency or some kind of official source. And he just, like, I don't know, he's got some clip of somebody on YouTube showing you just how easy it is to make those on, you know, Photoshop and have them offset just so slightly and, like, you know, literally make some outrageous claim at the top, like in bold text, and have them kind of follow that infographic format. And then before you know it, you know, your grandparents are sharing it around because it has the it's not a meme. It's literally, you know, disinformation posing as some sort of legit infographic. But I've definitely seen that becoming more of a thing, too.
Oh, yeah. You're spot on.
I blame early 2000s websites, guys. I don't know if you remember back in the day when everything became a quiz or an infographic, and that's mm-hmm. all that it was, mm-hmm. really. Like, because mm-hmm. we can get hits on those, and they're really shareable, and people love clicking on them.
And that's the internet our grandparents remember.
E-bombs world. And then also, on that note, memetic warfare, we're talking about it on the high macro level. We're talking about this in terms of state warcraft, but it can also just be a tool of like common criminal organizations. Never take those Facebook quizzes. It doesn't matter what bullshit astrological sign makes your favorite croissant thing is. You can figure that out for yourself, and that information that you give can be used against you frequently enough that you should assume it is the case.
But those meta quizzes are fine. Take the meta quizzes. Those are okay.
Meta quiz?
I'm joking. You know, Facebook just rebranded to Meta.
Oh, without changing. Yes. Alphabet style. Got it.
And just learned there are, surprise, other companies named Meta. All right, Mark, go with God. But or whomever you're messing with.
Yeah, but the whole point of bringing that up kind of in a joking way is just to say that we have taught ourselves as humans using an internet, an interconnected set of information, to trust those things, to trust all of that, you know, the infographics, the quick blurb that we don't even necessarily need to be cited. We just trust that it's a thing. And it doesn't matter who shares it with us or, you know, how it gets to us. If it's a graph and it looks legitimate, it's got some numbers going up and some numbers going down. Oh, this must be real.
Yeah. And, you know, U.S. mass media is also very into this. There are plenty of examples from any of your favorite channels, unfortunately, of graphs that visually, if you just glance at them while they're on the screen for, say, 5 to 10 seconds, they appear to be supporting whatever the anchor or self-appointed pundit / expert is saying. But if you looked at the sources and you actually read the report, then you would see, hey, that bar on the graph that says 30% should actually be higher or larger, taller than that other bar that says 15%. So why do they not match? And the clever thing about that is, if you are the producer of those bad faith attempts, you can always go back and say, oh, yeah, that was our bad. That was our good eye, bro, because you've been caught by one person out of thousands. So the effect is the same. I do believe this is a full episode, and it's important, as Fox would say, now more than ever. And in the meantime, I highly recommend looking into an experiment the Taiwanese government did, or a kind of a war game, where they had memetic engineering teams in every government department try to combat disinfo efforts, which, you know, Taiwan is getting most of their disinfo assaults from mainland China. But what these teams did is they had 60 minutes to respond to disinfo by using an approach they call humor over rumor. So clowning people, because the internet loves clowning people. We could be teaching them, but we're more into clowning them as a civilization. Also check out Evolutionary Psychology, Memes, and the Origin of War by Keith Henson. And stay tuned, because we'd love to make this an episode in the near future. In the meantime, tell us your favorite memes. Tell us the most dangerous memes. Tell us your take on memetic warfare. Is it overblown or is it even more dangerous than experts believe? 1-833-STD-WYTK or conspiracy at iHeartRadio.com. We're going to pause to share some dank memes and then we'll be back.
And we are back, and we're jumping to a voicemail sent to us from Voodoo.
Hey guys, you can call me Voodoo. Been listening to your show for many years. Just recently been listening to where you've been asking for scary stories, and also had an episode recently about reoccurring dreams. I've got one that's a little bit of both for you. From the ages of about 10 until about 15 years old, I'd have a reoccurring dream. When I was younger, it was probably 3 to 5 times a week. As I got older, it was probably once or twice a month, but the dream was always the same. An older version of me was at a party, dancing with a lady. And at some point we decided to go outside and stand on the patio and have a conversation and look up at the sky. She gives me a kiss on the cheek and walks back into the party. I linger on the patio for a little while and see what looks like a glowing something in the air. This thing starts moving closer and closer and closer to me, eventually striking me in the head and knocking me unconscious. Pan out to see my body laying on the ground, and the thing that hit me in the head is a silver orb, which then opens up and a little glowing ball comes out of it and enters into my ear, at which point I wake up. Terrified me for years. Then I kind of came to grips with it, eventually stopped having the dream. And ever since I stopped having the dream, I've had a reoccurring ear infection in my right ear. I'm now 38 years old and it continues to happen. Don't know if there's anything to it, but thought you guys might be interested. Love the show. Thanks.
All right.
Yikes.
There we go. Mm-hmm. Message from Voodoo of all people and places. Voodoo.
Voodoo.
Voodoo. Voodoo. Yes, yes, the voodoo that you do.
Yeah, so first of all, a reoccurring dream that involves a UAP, a very small UAP that makes physical striking contact to your head, and then somehow you're having an out-of-body experience within this dream, and then you're watching the UAP open up and another little floaty thing is coming out and going into your ear. So it's almost like not quite the abduction experience, but the probe, a probe-like experience where something is being inserted into your body during an encounter from the stars.
It reminds me of that movie Phantasm. This like creepy undertaker looking dude launches this like weird silver orb that then like shoots out knives and like slices into the people's like drills into their brains. It's a little less grisly version of that, but that was immediately what I thought of when I heard like little silver orb going into brains.
Mm-hmm. And then after having these dreams over the course of years and years and years, to have some kind of physical malady affecting the same place where this thing was affecting you in your dreams. I don't know, guys. Mm-hmm. Got to convince me of that coincidence.
Right. I've got to introduce you to that professor one day, Matt. So I have a theory, and Voodoo, I don't know if this will be helpful or not, but I do think it is pretty solid, and I would be interested to hear what you think of this. Is it possible that your subconscious mind is alerting you to something, or was alerting you to something that it clocked about your physical health through symbols? It communicated with you through, dare I say, memes or archetypes. I think that I would hazard I won't say 100%, but that is very likely what could be going on, because other people throughout history have reported similar ideas. One of the most common would be, you know, people have the anxiety dream often of something being wrong with their teeth, right? Teeth falling out or cracking, et cetera, et cetera. But in some cases, that's also your subconscious mind saying, hey, you have a cavity or something like that, right? Our minds are very, very, very intelligent and our conscious minds are only a piece of the iceberg there. So it may be that some part of you was trying to communicate with another part of you, which I find endlessly fascinating. Check out our episode series on dreams if you haven't had the chance to do so yet.
I'm going to throw some more wrinkles in. You guys. Yes, agreed as well. I talked to Voodoo just shortly before we started rolling here. The dreams began when he was around 7 or 8 years old, and they just kept happening. So it was always, he says, always an older woman in this case that he was with that always gave him that kiss before this whole, you know, situation went down with the UAP, starting around 7 or 8 years old. And then around the time he gets to 16, 17 years old, just before, you know, the end of high school, he stops having these dreams altogether. But what coincides with that time is when he began scuba diving a whole lot. And when he began scuba diving is when he started having the recurring ear infections. So the dreams, scuba diving is here, before it are the dreams, after it are the ear infections.
Well, isn't scuba diving, can't you get like swimmer's ear and stuff, or like have some issues because of the pressure? I mean, it seems like that's the red, that's the differentiating factor there is the scuba diving.
But look, to my mind, and I know I'm probably incorrect here, and a lot of, look, say what you want, that's fine, think what you want, wherever you are. To my mind, it's very strange that the decision to begin scuba diving and the training and everything is at that middle point between almost these precognitive dreams that something's going to happen with his ear, or something's going into his ear that shouldn't be there, and then it actually happening because of the activity that he's partaking in. Ooh. I don't know. It's weird to me.
Well, a self-fulfilling prophecy is still a prophecy, is it not? I would argue. And then additionally, I think we made a pretty, not a solid case, obviously, but we made a pretty good speculative case that time could work differently in dreams. And nobody really wants to throw around the P word, precognition, in academia, but just because a current academic culture poo-poos the thing doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Keep in mind, this is the same civilization that beat the living Christ out of a guy for suggesting that doctors should maybe wash their hands before they put them inside people. And that guy died in an asylum. I think it's quite possible that I'm certain there's more to the science of dreams and the function of the brain during sleep. There's more to it than current society is aware. But I would also, I'd also be interested, like, that's a really good point about scuba diving, because it can cause ear problems if you're not up to snuff on your safety precautions and your guidelines. You know, like, the swimmer's ear is a real thing. People can have fluid and blood leakage in the middle ear, and that can lead to infections if it's left untreated. And it's just the time, Matt. It's the timeline. You know what I mean? That's what's interesting, because these dreams didn't start after the scuba stuff, right?
Yeah. But now, later in his life, as he's scuba diving more and more, he's getting a little more adventurous with the types of dives he's going on. And Voodoo says one of the most interesting things he does now is night diving. This is not something I was aware of. Perhaps I'm not curious enough, and I've never been certified to go scuba diving. But the act of going into the water, going fairly deep down on a scuba dive in the night, where the only lights you have are the flashlights, the lights on the other divers and yourself. So when you look out on the seafloor, wherever you are, all you can see are these little pools of light from all the other divers. And Voodoo described it very much like being on another planet, exploring another planet in the dark with only your torch, if you will. And for some reason, my mind takes that back to this, you know, again, unidentified aerial phenomena in his dream that is exploring planet Earth and interacts with him. He's saying you can, when you're on these night dives, you can see fish and turtles as they're sleeping. You can see some of the anemone that will glow. if you shine your light on certain smaller fish, a larger fish will be alerted because they can now see that other fish and they will make a meal of it. And there's something also connected with that to me of being on another planet exploring with this other vision that he had of this thing coming from the stars, directly from the stars, to visit him specifically. I don't know. Look, I'm over here just analyzing Voodoo's dreams, but I just found it to be compelling, guys.
Agreed. And we've been getting a lot of folks writing in with strange encounters in the world of dream. Some of them are downright terrifying stories and experiences. And, you know, I don't know about you guys, but the version of reality I subscribe to doesn't make a huge distinction between the world of imagination and the world of physicality. So to me, if something happens in a dream, especially if you believe in a multiversal kind of interpretation of the world or the universe, to me, if something happens in a dream, that means it's on some level real. And if our dreams are just a way for another part of the mind to hold up a mirror or to make commentary on something that's happening or some interpretation of something that's happening, then that also is no less real. Your mind was telling you something, Voodoo. That is not an opinion. That's a fact. Your mind was telling you something. It's just tough to figure out what that was and if there is a correlation to the events in the waking world or in this version of it.
Mm. Well, guys, that's all I've really got. Voodoo, if you're interested, you can head over to places like Psychology Today, read all about reoccurring dreams, or what is it? The Sleep Foundation, which is, you know, a place where you can go to learn about stuff. They've got pretty good bibliographies and references at the bottom of the Sleep Foundation Recurring Dreams article. So, you know, that's worth looking into.
I'm just laughing because I thought you were going to say it was a snooze fest.
No, it's not a snooze fest.
They would never say something like that.
Yeah, there's some great writing over there. It's just, I don't know. It's kind of the stuff that you expect. The things that we've talked about before, like you said, Ben, the losing teeth, nakedness, not being ready for school, flying, falling, car crashes. Mm-hmm. This dream that you told us about, Voodoo, is just unlike any recurring dream I've heard of.
Completely agree. I mean, it's definitely a weird one. I wasn't trying to neg it, saying that maybe it was connected to some pressure thing with the scuba diving. I just think it's an interesting coincidence if they aren't related. But yeah, I mean, what an odd recurring dream. Like, what is it implying? You're right, Ben. Is it some sort of precognition of an impending ailment, or is it the cause itself? Hard to say, but really fascinating stuff.
Hmm.
I would note, to be completely fair, we do have to note one thing. Post these dreams, if anything had happened to your ear, Voodoo, it would be very difficult, I think, for many people to not feel that there was some possible correlation, no matter what that thing might have been, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it could just be perceived, right? Because you're making that connection, because it makes us feel better to see that pattern than for it to just be chaotic. Right on, Ben. All right. Well, hey, we're going to take another quick sponsor break, but we'll be right back with another message from you.
Welcome back, the public. That's you, the listeners of this show, the most important part of the show. And one of you wrote in with a lovely two-tiered email with two. I'm just going to briefly brush over the first point and then get right into the second one. This one comes from Bronze Ranked Boomer. Love that. It says, "Hey guys, I'm behind on the recent episodes. I just finished the one with the robo dog from Boston Dynamics. I thought you'd get a kick out of this." And then Bronze Ranked Boomer linked to a YouTube channel from a dude named Michael Reeves, who is a young maker type guy. He builds robots and weird devices and a lot of things involving tasers. Kind of just like, you know, dumb inventions. Like, he had built a machine, a robot that picks tomatoes out of your salad. There's one video called "Using Mind Control to Drive a Car," electrocuting my muscles to force me to dab. things like that. But his most recent video, which has upwards of 12 million views, is called Teaching a Robot Dog to Pee Beer. And he has one of these Boston Dynamic robot dogs that he modifies significantly with a little tank full of beer, a little nozzle that goes right, you know, where the business end of a dog would go. And some like little Arduino microcomputer dealies. And yeah, he teaches the dog, quote unquote, teaches the dog to pee beer into a cup. At first, it is a disaster. It just kind of pees all over the place. And then I think he eventually gets it right. But the dog is called Pissbot 9000, which I thought was great. So thank you for that. And then bronze ranked boomer or BRB goes on to talk about this other story. Recently, there was a backlash in the streaming community of something called blue light blocking skincare. The streamer Valkyrie or Valkyrie, that's how it's spelled, was promoting her skincare line called Reflect. Of course, it's missing the vowels because that's just how branding works these days. She claims that her product will protect blue light from damaging your skin. Here is a link to her skincare product. And interestingly enough, when you go to rflct.com, you get this message saying Reflect is no longer available. Thank you to all who played important roles to conduct research, develop products, create a brand, and serve as partners along our journey. While we believe in the formulations created, after further reflection, we have decided to move forward on new paths, effectively terminating the Reflect brand. Should you have further questions, please contact inquiries at reflect.com. Then there's this thread that BRB links to on Reddit talking about various scientific research into blue light and what it can do to our brains and our, you know, eyes and potentially our skin. So here's the thing. Oh, and then BRB goes on. She also made a video trying to explain her situation, but it just made it worse. She claims they have researched the damage of blue light on people's skin, but she can't reveal the studies because it's specific for her company.
Not looking good.
Yeah, not looking good. So is blue light skin damage legit or just some scam to get people to buy skincare products? So this all starts with, like, you know, you may notice on your phone there's a mode called night mode that filters out blue light. Matt, I believe you've talked about wearing blue blocking sunglasses. Isn't that right?
Correct. Yes.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a scam necessarily.
No.
The blue blocking.
No, I'm not saying it is. I'm saying that's where it starts, right?
Okay.
This idea that blue light causes eye strain, and that, you know, they can lead to prolonged exposure to blue lights can cause, you know, development of cataracts or something like that over a long period of time, because blue light is one of the most powerful colors of light, and the sun, you know, puts out a ton of blue light. So, like, filtering that, you know, from your eyes, in addition to just filtering out UV rays, it's obviously going to be a good thing for your eyeballs. Valkyrie made this case based on the fact that she is a Twitch streamer, you know, a gamer and YouTube content creator. So she's, you know, hopping on this blue light bad train, but really took it to the next level in this notion that blue light is somehow bad for your skin. There is no research that I have found that even remotely indicates that. And in fact, there's a Time Magazine article that I found that says, forget what you think you know about blue light and sleep, because we've also been told that using our phones at night because of the blue light is in fact bad for your sleep. It turns out, according to a recent paper published by the University of Manchester in Current Biology, is trying to kind of challenge that idea. They did a study where they exposed mice to different lights of various hues but equal brightness, and they found that warm-toned light was actually worse for the mice sleep because it could actually trick their bodies into thinking it's daytime, while cooler blue lights more closely mimic, you know, the way it looks around twilight. So this sort of throws a wrench into the whole, like, you know, oh, night mode on your phone is going to make it okay. I mean, honestly, it looks like it's more likely just the fact that you're on your phone, you know, mm-hmm. and not quieting your mind than it is like blue light having some sort of elongated, like, you know, negative effect on your sleep. But other researchers that are cited in this Time article argue that electronics keep you up. Some can keep you because of the bright lights. It really is more the time suck of it all and the, you know, distraction keeping your mind from, you know, resting than it is the color of the light. There's also specifically an article that BRB linked to from the Washington Post about this specific case and the controversy that kind of, like, you know, sprang from it. So here is what they say. I'm just going to read a quote from this. Blue light is a form of visible high energy light that is only slightly less powerful than ultraviolet light, which is emitted by the sun and can cause skin and eye damage over time. While some experts have suggested that blue light from screens might contribute to eye strain, it's still an area of contentious debate. The notion that blue light might cause skin damage has even less scientific backing. And they interview a person named Shari Marshbein, who is a board-certified dermatologist from New York, who says there is, at this time, inconclusive evidence as to whether or not screens can actually produce enough light to cause serious skin damage. A lot of companies are focusing on blue light protection because we know this comes from sun exposure, even if the evidence pointing towards devices isn't as clear. So, yeah, it does seem like this was not sure if the partners in this, you know, this is just an entrepreneurial venture. You know, I'm sure there were, it's not like Valkyrie was like coming up with these formulas all by herself. Maybe she was taken for a bit of a ride too. But, you know, this kind of creating a problem, maybe that doesn't necessarily exist or at the very least isn't supported by science. I can see why people might get a little irritated about that, especially from a big, you know, highly paid Instagram influencer. Mm-hmm. Yeah, what do you guys think?
I mean, I think anytime there's a problem, you can you can exploit it, right? And by to make money, at least, to offer a solution. And we've talked about it before with the medical industry, where you can, if you want to, make up a problem that you then offer the only solution to, the only currently available solution, right? I'm not saying that's what's happening here, but it wouldn't be the first time.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's accurate. There's also the idea, the statement that these findings are inconclusive or uncertain at this time is super helpful for businesses that want to sell things, because they can say no one's proven it's not bad for you, right? This uncertainty is where a lot of profit opportunities thrive. But with the studies that I was reading, I found a really interesting one from the National Library of Medicine that may have found something slightly different from some of these folks. They were saying that this HEV, or the fancy name for blue light, can be harmful to skin, but it can also be beneficial. It all depends upon the intensity and the wavelength. So the idea then, at least according to this, and this is one study out of many, the idea then would be, if that is true, would this blue blocking cosmetic not possibly be harmful for skin? You have to be so careful with cosmetics because of all the claims that are made and how I don't like the term woo, but how misleading they can be or how in bad faith they can be.
Right. There is an interesting little side note that comes from another dermatologist named Kathleen Susi, who's actually a dermatologic surgeon and director of Yale's Aesthetic Dermatology Program. So she does speak about a very specific subset of patients that could actually have pigmentation issues that could be like exacerbated by exposure to blue light emissions from the sun. She says blue light can induce pigmentation in the skin, particularly in darker skinned individuals. Prolonged exposure to blue light, and we're talking about like blue light emissions from the sun, can introduce hyperpigmentation. There was this sort of theoretical concern that patients who are prone to pigment issues, so this isn't just your average fair skinned individual with no pigmentary history. This is someone who might suffer from a condition called melasma, or their skin is prone to hyperpigmentation or darkening, could be more sensitive to external triggers of blue light outside of sun rays. So again, she goes on to say this very specific, you know, niche group of patients, and points to a 2019 study where researchers exposed one side of participants' faces to the equivalent of blue light from a very powerful screen and shielded the other for 8 hours per day, 5 days in a row. They largely found no difference in the side of the face that was exposed compared to the other. But what this does show, this is screen strength, right? This is not sun strength, which is what this expert was referring to that could actually have an effect. And this whole cosmetic line was specifically, you know, addressing screen time. So yeah, that strikes me as being utter BS. It was probably why they pulled it. Internet snake oil is what it seems like to me.
And of course, you know, again, I feel ethically bound to point this out every time these sorts of conversations come up. Again, if this is not causing actual harm to anybody in any way, and it makes you feel better, then it's okay. Just don't be under the illusions that the science is sound. And also, we have to acknowledge that the idea of causing actual harm could mean could be the same as using this instead of seeking medical treatment for some condition of the skin or another. So. Is like, you know, if you're in your local Sephora or whatever makeup store, and you see something that is like, this has baby angel tears, and because it has baby angel tears, it's going to protect you from elbow weariness, which is when your elbows get depressed. And if that like makes you feel better, then fine, do it. But don't be surprised if you just spend a few minutes looking into literally anything other than WebMD, aka youhavecancer.com. If you look into any reputable medical investigation, you can't, and you find out that, surprise, there's no such thing as baby angel tears, and elbow weariness is a weird name for several other possible conditions, then, you know, consider what a doctor might say about your elbows. I mean, I'm walking that example down the street a little bit because I think it's funny, and hopefully I'm right, but it's something people need to be aware of. The goal is not always to help you. The goal is to help persuade you to buy something. That's a very important distinction.
Very good.
And agreed. And again, this is like two clicks away from like the survival type supplements and meds that like Alex Jones chills, you know, on his show. In my opinion, I think maybe this person's heart was in the right place. And I feel like maybe she too was taken for a bit of a ride by her partners. Then the backlash kind of, you know, shut the whole thing down. So I don't necessarily think that she was, you know, operating with like complete disregard for the facts.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it.
No, it doesn't seem like it, but it does seem like this is absolute, you know, hooey, as they say. But yeah, that's this one. So always be vigilant and do your own research, and don't let people feed you a bill of goods, you know, when it comes to like stuff that you're putting on your skin or in your body.
Oh, and send us your favorite strange claims in the cosmetic industry. The U.S. is actually pretty tame about a lot of these, even when they don't withstand scientific rigor. But the rest of the world does have some wild stuff out there. So be careful. And again, if you identified with something in Voodoo's story, or if you have some perspective on the function of time in dreams, we'd love to hear from you. If you also, I think we said this at the beginning of this week's segment, but if you have some examples of weaponized memes, then please send them our way. We can't wait to hear from you. We try to be easy to find online.
Ah, yes, the internet is where you may find us in all of the places of note, including Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube, where you can find us under the handle Conspiracy Stuff. We are Conspiracy Stuff Show on Instagram. And if you don't want to be on the internet, you want to maybe use more old school or analog means of communications, well, we got you covered there, too.
That's right. We have a phone number. But before you call it, and before I tell you how to call it, I ask that you please take a second and review this show on whatever podcatcher you use, especially if it's Apple Podcasts. That helps us out a ton, especially if you like the show. If you don't like the show, you know, You can call us and tell us how you don't like it rather than write a review.
Our number is 1-833-STDWYTK. Hope you're singing along at home. You'll call it. You'll hear a message telling you you are indeed in the right place. You'll have 3 minutes. Those 3 minutes are yours. Do with them what you will. But as always, make the most of your time. Give yourself a sick nickname. Tell us what's on your mind. Second most important thing about your call is to let us know if we can use your voice and or message on the air. First most important thing, do not edit yourself. If you have some additional photographs, if you have some links you'd like to send us, we love to hear from you. We do read every email we get. All you have to do is drop us a line where we are.
Conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.